Welcome to the Ted Brower Show. This is Austin Brower. I'm on here with Ted Brower today. We've got some interesting articles for you, and just wanted to give you some more information from a non-biased news source, which is healthmasters.com. We enjoy giving you guys the real news. There's one I wanted to start off with this first thing, just to kind of, A, give you guys the information on it for all legality purposes and understand what's going on, and secondly, to see how the wording that a lot of the news medias are using to try and manipulate people's thoughts and actions and skewing them in their direction. If most of you guys haven't seen it yet, Virginia Attorney General Mark Herring announced yesterday that Virginia will no longer recognize out-of-state concealed handgun permits, part of a national push to circumvent legislators opposed to tightening gun laws. This is very interesting because if you guys understand the west coast of the map, it's very difficult to get to the northeast part of the United States without going through Virginia. You essentially have to go up to the top of Tennessee and Kentucky and completely bypass it. Now is they are not going to recognize concealed weapons permits in almost the entire United States. The only exemptions will be West Virginia, Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas, and Utah because of some prior agreement. But Florida and every other state will not be recognized there anymore. What's interesting here is I wanted to read you the text. This is what I want to point out. It states in the article, it's from the Washington Post, nevertheless, more than 6.3 million people who could legally carry concealed handguns in Virginia today will lose the privilege when the change takes effect next year. An additional 420,000 Virginians with concealed carry permits will no longer enjoy reciprocity when they travel to the six different states, which those six states now are Florida, Louisiana, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, and Wyoming. They have revoked their mutual recognition status with Virginia after they did this. But the point I'm making, the whole spiel with this is, I'll read it again. It says, more than 6.3 million people who could legally carry concealed handguns in Virginia today will lose the privilege when the change takes effect next year. Understand this, guys. That is not a privilege to carry a firearm. It is not a privilege to drive a vehicle. It is not a privilege to own your house. It is not a privilege to drive freely on your way, unmolested, on interstates that we have paid for. These are words they are using to try and manipulate the public into thinking we are servants. We owe them. They're giving us a privilege by allowing us to do this. It is not a privilege to carry my firearm. So, excuse me. Voice got dry there.
All right, hang on a second. Let me go ahead and comment while you're doing that, Austin, while you're getting some water. You know, Austin is exactly right. You know, our Constitution gives us certain rights. But the reality is that even though we're given rights to bear arms in the Second Amendment, doesn't mean that that's something that they're giving us a right to do. Human beings have a right to defend themselves. If you're under attack, you have a right to defend yourself and not to be killed. And this is what Austin is saying, and I agree with him wholeheartedly on this. You know, we have concealed weapon permits that are pretty easy to get here in the state of Florida. My whole family, my grandmother, Sharon's mother, Austin, me, Austin's wife, you know, my wife, we all carry concealed weapons. I carry a 45 Kimber and I carry two extra magazines with me on a belt clip. And the craziest thing about this is I feel safer when I go to places like Walmart or places where you have a cross-section of the society that may or may not like you. They're with you. And the sad part about it is a lot of these cross-sectional parts of the society, they attack you in gangs. You know, there's two or three or four or five. I had a police officer tell me many years ago when he found out I was carrying a Kimber, he said, you really need to do that, but they're only carrying seven rounds because it's a 45. You really need to keep at least two more magazines on you at all times just in case something bad happens. I said, you see, if you run out of ammo, it's no longer a gun. It becomes a club. And he said, and it's not very effective. And he said, you've got to carry more ammo. And see, this is the thing. When we're armed and we're armed properly and we're trained to handle the weaponry, it becomes part of us. And Austin's exactly right. He's on point on this. I mean, when Virginia now decides to go ahead, remember now, in Virginia, a lot of politicians don't live in D.C. Very few of them do. They live in Virginia. And what they happen is they're always crossing the border from D.C. down to Virginia. And this is probably the state legislature saying, hey, wait a minute, we don't want you carrying guns in Virginia because it's too close to D.C. We don't want you carrying guns up Interstate 75 because it's, or Interstate 95 because it's too close to D.C. So we're going to make it more and more difficult to transport weapons. And that's what a lot of this is about. Again, Virginia, shame on you. Shame on your politicians. You people need to go ahead and get the people out of office that voted for this. Let me do a more positive note. This is a text that came into me today from David Jeremiah, who's a nationally known pastor, very, very good Bible teacher. And it's on, what does Christmas really mean? I'm going to read this to you because it really blessed me this morning, and I'm going to talk a little bit about more of this in a second. Most people don't understand Christmas. They never think beyond the babe in the manger. But Christmas is about emptiness. It's about an empty throne. It's about an empty manger. It's about an empty cross and an empty tomb, all of which fill our empty hearts. It's a circuit. When Jesus traveled from heaven to earth, he used a round-trip ticket with stops along the way. He left the throne for the manger. He left the manger for the cross. He left the cross for the tomb. And he left the tomb for the throne. He left blessings behind at every stop. He emptied himself so that we might be filled. That's what the true Christmas story is all about. That means Jesus came into the world with the cross in mind. Since God cannot die, the second person of the Trinity entered into the human race through the virgin womb of Mary, taking on flesh and becoming a man. He did this to offer himself. He was born to die, and he died to rise again. Because of his death, we can live forgiven. And because of his resurrection, we can live forever. That's why an empty Christmas is so fulfilling. Isn't that good, Austin?
That's excellent, bud. I saw that text you sent me earlier, and I was hoping you were going to read that on air.
Well, yeah, I wanted to because, you know, the truth of the matter is, I mean, we've got all of this stuff going on, all this negative stuff. And what happens over the holidays is we have a lot of negative stuff coming out all over the place. And here's why this is happening. This attention field, this holographic universe that we live in, this matrix of sorts, is controlled by this satanic artificial intelligence, quantum computer, whatever you want to call it, that they've got buried everywhere now, that's picking up the frequencies of all of us and generating that same field frequency back into the planet. That's why it's getting so incredibly negative. That's why last night I had a horrible phone call here at the house. My home number got out. Somebody decided to call me up and chew me out, and I didn't even do anything. I don't even know this person. Never even met this person. Never even heard of this person before. And I ended up hanging up on this person, and I thought to myself, this is a pastor who did this. And I thought to myself, what happened to civility? What happened to trusting and honoring people and being respectful of one another? What happened to all that? I mean, why can't we agree with somebody 95% of the time and let the other 5% just fall by the wayside and not make a big issue out of it? A few weeks ago, I had my 60th birthday here at the house. And I had a few friends that I've known for 5-10 years, and they were here. And then I had friends that I've known for 20, 30, and 40 years, they were here. And we probably had 30 or 40 people here in total. And what was interesting, the friends that I've known for 4 or 5 years, maybe 8 years, they said to me after the party, they said, it's so amazing to us that you have friends that you've known since college for 40 years. Your old college roommate was here. It's amazing to us that you've maintained these friendships over all of these years. It's because of civility. See, it doesn't matter if me and my old college roommate don't agree 100% of the time. It doesn't matter. 95% of the stuff we agree on. We don't have to agree on everything. It's like with my wife. We've been married for 32, almost 33 years now. And the craziest thing is our marriage gets better and better and better. In German, the term is Verrücktlauf, which means to kind of run around crazy, do whatever you want to do. I mean, just leave people alone is what it means. We let each other just do what we do. We don't micromanage one another. And then we agree with each other 95% of the time, and we've agreed not to make an issue out of the 5% of the times that we don't agree with each other, and we try to work on that, not to provoke one another. That's why we've got such a great marriage. And as this Christian season rolls on, and as we hear about the baby in the manger and about the cross and about the redemptive power of Jesus Christ and the blood of our Lord, and how we basically become enthroned with God in the 13th dimension when we accept Christ, and we basically share his covenant with him, and we basically become heirs and inheritors, you know, inheritors and trustees of the planet. Let us realize something. Let us all walk in love. Pay special attention this holiday season, because these people that are running the planet, these globalists that are broadcasting these incredibly negative frequencies into the fabric of time space around you, want you to fight with one another. They want you to hate one another. They want you to cause conflict with one another. And let's not do that. Let's celebrate the birth of our Lord and Savior. Let's celebrate the birth of God Almighty, who incarnated himself, duplicated himself, put it in the form of a tiny little zygote embryo, and implanted that in a virgin, so that he could be here and be a man and basically give himself for us, so that we could all be redeemed and come back to God. Let's think about those things. Let's get along with one another. Let's not allow petty differences to be around us. That's what's happening. I mean, I was talking to Sharon today. You know, it's like 80 degrees out here, like 85% humidity today. Can't see the sun. Haven't seen the sun in days here in Florida. It used to be called the Sunshine State. Now it's the chemtrail state. They're doing everything they possibly can to destroy the Christmas season, to destroy the Christmas message. You know, they started using Xmas back in the 70s, the Rothschild Zionist Kabbalists who run the media. They started not talking about Jesus anymore. Now they're banning manger scenes all over the country in public areas. And they're doing this on purpose. They don't want to. They don't want you to know who you are as a Christian, as a believer in Jesus Christ. They want you to think that you're just another animal, another goyim to them, just somebody who can be bought and be sold. That's not who we are. The redemptive power that we have through the cross of Jesus Christ, the continual healing frequency that comes from him through the blood of Christ, the power that he's given us by the covenant he established with us in the 13th dimension through our pineal gland, our cord of living water, our silver cord, the Bible calls it, is all part of God's great plan for you. So let's walk in love over the holidays. Let's treat each other with respect, and let's just forgive one another. If you've got people that you've been bitter and angry at for years, just forgive them. Let me tell you a little secret about that. When you're angry at somebody, it doesn't hurt them because they don't even know you're angry at them. They're at home sleeping with the covers pulled over their head. You're the one that's all hacked off, running around screaming and yelling and cussing. Okay? It doesn't make any difference to them because they're not here. All it does is affect you. It affects your body chemistry. It affects your cortisol. It affects your ability to digest food properly, which affects your ability to uptake nutrients. That's why so many people who live in bitterness and anger, they get sick. They get arthritis. They get cancer. They get heart disease. Because the bitterness, the anger, the cortisol, the lack of proper nutrient absorption affects them. And they get sick and they get old. People are always saying to me, Ted, you're 60 years old and you look so young. And I always say, thank you. But remember, I do my best to always walk in love and forgiveness with everybody. And if I get to a point where I really can't get along with somebody, or somebody's really frustrating me, kind of like last night when I got that crazy phone call, I just say, look, you know, I'm going to hang up now. You know, lose my number. You know, that's what I do. I try not to dwell on it, but I forgive the person who called me. He's just misinformed. And I hope the best for him, and I hope God's best for him. But the reality is, we've got to learn to do that. We have to learn to do that in the aggregate as Christians. I mean, Christians are the only group of people that kill their wounded. It's awful. We can't be like that. We're not of this world. We're different. We have to stay together in unity of spirit and in our bond of faith. And we have to realize if we do that, we can literally change this holographic universe that we live in, of one to one of love and of peace and of mercy and of just forgiveness, and just we could turn this planet into heaven on earth literally if we wanted to, and we could stop this coming apocalypse. We could stop it. God would give us a reprieve. But guys, if we don't stop it, if we don't start walking in love, if we don't start taking authority on who we are, if we don't start praying like we need to, this book, this chapter of Revelation that's unfolding before our very eyes is fixing to go really negative really fast, and I just want you guys to be aware of that. But don't ever let it be said that Austin and Ted Brower didn't tell you guys the truth, and we didn't do everything we possibly could to stop the coming apocalypse, because we really believe that we can postpone this based on God's word if we humble ourselves and we serve him. So I just wanted to mention that to you guys. I didn't write that out. That was all, believe it or not, ad lib. So I just wanted to share that with you real quick. But let me go ahead. Let's go back to the news. Here's another interesting one. At 108 U.S. colleges, more than half of the students haven't paid even $1 on their student loans. That's half. Zero Hedge wrote this, that the student loan bubble is one of the many subprime crises, because as of this moment, there are just too many asset bubbles to count, thanks to 7 years of quantitative easing. We also explained that the main reason for soaring college costs is the cheap and easily available government-funded student debt. which at last check was over $1.2 trillion and rising exponentially. Today, the Zero Hedge had an article titled, U.S. Helps Shaky Readers Knew Already, namely that it's a government direct intervention with trillions in aid that is making the debt default problem far more accurate than it would have been otherwise, and leads to keeping millions more students in college. Now listen to this for a second. Millions of more students in college getting basically government aid where they end up learning no marketable skill sets in a job market that rewards mostly waiters and bartenders, yet loads up these students with untenable debt. And I've told you guys this for years and years and years. When you go to college, the bachelor's degree is only a beginning, unless you get a nursing degree or an engineering degree or a teaching degree. You need to either get those three degrees or you need to go to law school or medical school. Or you could also become an accountant. Those are okay too, because you could become in a profession and get you know, and start doing your profession. But the reality is, so many degrees are only stepping stones for graduate programs, such as law school or medical school. So if you get a degree that is not marketable and you get student debt on top of it, you'd be better off to go to technical school and learn a trade like computer engineering, sound engineering, something like that, you know, quantum mechanics, anything besides going in and getting a degree in sociology. Or, you know, or black history or whatever. You don't need degrees like that. They don't do anything. The only reason you can do anything with those degrees is if you get a master's degree and then you get a doctorate, and then you don't know anything and you can't do anything, but you can teach other people how not to do anything or know anything by being a university professor. And that's sad, but that's true. And so that's what people need to realize, Austin, that student debt and taking classes and courses that don't have any goal or any purpose simply isn't beneficial. What do you think about that? Are you there, Austin?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. Are you back?
Okay. No, my phone was cutting out a little bit. Sorry about that. You're absolutely right on that end. I mean, I've known multiple kids that I've graduated with. I mean, one of my good friends that I actually walked with, you know, he went to Southeastern with me. And, you know, I talked to him about a year after he graduated. And I think he said that his student debt was still, I think, at $106,000 or $108,000 that he still owed. And the problem is what a lot of these kids do, and they don't understand this when they're doing it, because they essentially just think it's free money. They really haven't hit concrete rational thought. You know, they're 18, 19, 20 years old, and they have no idea how serious this is going to become in the future. And they finance everything. They finance their books. They finance tuition. They finance their housing. They finance their food plans. They finance everything. They even take additional loans out on top of their student loans that roll into them for, you know, extracurricular activity loans or vehicle loans, stuff like that. And what nobody understands when they're doing it is you cannot bankrupt student loans, period. You are stuck with them the rest of your life. You and your spouse have no chance of bankrupting them legally, period. There's no way to do it. And so these kids go through college, and I mean, and say, now if you guys are really, I mean, somebody's really, really trying to, you know, work hard and they really want to get into college, and they have no backing. Their parents can't afford it. They can't afford it. The first thing I tell people is make sure your grades are as good as possible. Try and get as many scholarships, Bright Future scholarships, different types of government scholarships that will pay for a lot of times a large portion of it. And then at that end, start at a community college where the tuition's as cheap as it gets. It doesn't matter if you're getting a bachelor's degree there or you're getting a bachelor's degree at Florida State or any other university. It's still a bachelor's degree. Get it in something that you want to get in. Like Dad said, you want to go further and further. But as your base, get it there and only get student loans on the core base tuition cost that you can't pay for in cash at that very time. And rent your books online. These books now are ridiculous. Last time I remember when I was in graduate program, some of these books were $250 and $300 per book, per class. And I went online. There's a multiple different online college book rental websites now. You can rent the books for a lot of times 10% of what they are new and just pocket the rest of the money, you know, not waste it all. So that's the idea and the goal behind it. If you are going to do it, go to the community college, start off as cheap as you can, pay as much as you can in cash, get as many scholarships as you can, and rent your books and be done with it. And a lot of times you can get through a bachelor's degree for no more than 10 or 15 grand from a good community college. But this whole going to these private colleges and financing $20,000, $30,000 a year with your housing and your tuition and your food, it's nonsense, and it really, it's going to be very difficult to pay that off in the future. Most people don't realize it.
Well, no, it is. I know with Harrison, your brother, who's 16 now, he's in his second year of college. He's a full-time student now. He's already got 42 collegiate hours finished, and the state of Florida is paying this because they pay for dual enrollment for kids as part of their high school curriculum. And so we're actually going to get him through 3 years of college as a senior, sophomore, junior, and senior in high school. And what will happen is that when he graduates with his AA degree and his high school diploma at the same time, he'll have over 102 collegiate hours right now is what he's on schedule for. He'll be 18 hours short from his bachelor's degree. Then all he'll have to do is go like another semester to the same college, the same junior college, and get another 18 hours in, live here at home like he's doing now, and he'll have a completely fully accredited bachelor's degree. And that's what people don't understand. It doesn't matter where you went to school for your bachelor's degree if you're trying to go to graduate school. All it matters is one thing, what your GPA is. That's all it matters. That's all they care about. A lot of times they don't even care what courses you took. And see, that's what folks don't get. They think, well, we're going to send you to these prep high schools that are going to cost you $40,000 a year, and then you're going to go to these Ivy League schools that are going to cost you $50,000 a year. And so before it's over with, you've got $200,000-$300,000 in a child in their education, when Harrison will have a bachelor's degree that's fully accredited, that's fully transferable to any university or program in the United States for zero debt. Because the state of Florida paid for it. Also, there's grants and there's all kinds of other things that are out there that are free that you don't have to pay back. So do all of that first. I mean, when I was in college, goodness, my first 2 years I worked. My last year I worked and I made extra money to help support myself so I would have money for extracurricular activities. I mean, heaven forbid I had a job and going to college. I mean, nobody really wants to do that anymore. That's awful. I mean, it's ridiculous. Austin, you worked as a waiter when you were in college at Southeastern, when you were like 18, 19 years old. And so you made money, extra money doing that. See, that's what people need to understand, because what they do with these student loans, I had a friend of mine one time, he had a kid, and the kid bought a motorcycle. The motorcycle got stolen. Well, the kid didn't want to pay the motorcycle, so he quit making payments on it. But it was in his name. What ended up happening is the guys came after the kid. The dad got involved. And then the dad finally told the motorcycle people who they'd already sold the paper two or three times to other lenders, to other bill collectors, that, you know, the kid was going to file bankruptcy. They said, well, we don't think he'll do that over a $10,000 debt, but we're going to kick this thing back up to like 26% interest now. And what's going to happen is we're not coming after that kid. We have 7 years to do it. And what we're going to do is we're going to accrue this income. So every 3 years, that $10,000 is going to double. And so what's going to happen after 10,000, after 3 years, it's going to be $20,000. After 6 years, it's going to be $40,000. And then we're going to come after him again at the $40,000 level. And it'll continue to accrue until we get over $100,000 due on a $10,000 loan. And we'll put a lien on him on his job and we'll garnish his wages for the rest of his life. That's what they were told. And I was privy to that conversation. And the craziest thing is the guy was serious. And the sad part about it is people don't realize when you sign up for these loans or you sign up for this debt and you're young and you haven't reached the age of concrete rational thought, like Austin pointed out, this stuff comes back to bite you in the butt with a set of vice grips and it doesn't let go. And see, and that's what people need to realize is you've got to stay out of debt. That's so, so very important. What's your next story, Oz?
Next one's a pretty exciting one here. Thanks to a New York judge who's actually got, you know, pretty competent brain on his shoulders, and five mothers who have been willing to stand up to the state, yearly forced flu vaccination experimentation will not be taking place on children in the state of New York now. This is basically a big win for human rights. Judge Manuel J. Mendez, JSC, overturned Mayor Bloomberg's flu vaccine requirements for all children between 6 months and 6 years of age attending either daycares, preschools, or Head Start programs. Regulated by New York, Judge Mendez wrote that the New York City Charter contains no suggestion that the Board of Health has the authority to create laws, thereby forepassing that no flu vaccination requirements are required for any children under the age of six, which, granted, it needs to be higher. They need to do it, no mandatory vaccination, period. But this is an excellent step in basically preventing a lot of these young children from getting shot up with garbage that they don't even need to be exposed to, that a lot of times doesn't even work. So this is definitely a positive aspect. And New York, of all places, New York State, which is usually very liberal, but I'm glad this guy has had a good head on his shoulders.
I'm glad he had a moment of clarity, as I always say. Okay, yeah. Here's another article. This is from this is interesting. This is Paul Joseph Watson, and I like Paul. I think he does a good job. Hundreds of ISIS jihadists have already slipped into Europe and are preparing Paris-style attacks with hundreds more on the way, according to a source that spoke to a Norwegian newspaper, Dagbladet. The first wave is said to already have traveled to Europe. The second wave is still within the terror group in Syria after having received training in the militant camp between Sinjar and Mosul in Iraq. The Norwegian Police Security Service, PST, confirms to Dagbladet that they are familiar with the information, Norway's second largest newspaper. The source, whose information has previously been proven accurate, told the newspaper that 300 jihadists were trained to carry out massacres in Europe. 28 lost their lives in Syria, but 272 made it to Europe and have been instructed to lay low. Now, also remember, we have the terrorist training camps in the United States that the government and the FBI are fully aware of. The man who wrote the book, Gladio, talks about this in his lectures, Paul Williams. And the thing about this is sad is that we've got like 36 of these terrorist training camps, and we train these jihadists to send them back into the Middle East. But by doing so, we train them here, we send them back. We have no idea if they're going to maintain. This is so stupid, guys. I mean, I don't even like speaking like this, okay? We don't know if they're going to maintain loyalty to the United States. What the heck are we even doing that for? This is insanity. This is stupid. Okay, why are we training jihadists to do anything? Why can't we just leave these people alone in the Middle East and stop bombing them? It's like I said the other day. You kill their father, you kill their mother, you kill their children, you kill all their brothers and sisters. You kill everybody. This person is completely despondent. What do you think he's going to do when you give him a gun and you bring him to the United States and you give him some C4? I mean, come on. Is this saying rocket scientists? Get the heck out of the Middle East. Quit bombing these places in the rubble. Tell the CIA to pound salt and quit bringing all this stinking heroin out of Afghanistan into the United States. There you go, Austin. That kind of sums that story up. What's your next one?
Nope.
I'm here, buddy. Go ahead.
I don't know what happened. Everything just cut out.
Are you still there?
I'm here. You're here. We're both here. Now.
Todd, are we still on the air? Okay, I don't even know if are we on the air, Austin?
I have no idea, bud.
Well, we're gonna pretend like we are. If you can hear us now, we're pretending like we're on the air because I haven't heard from Todd. Todd, let. Okay, there's Todd. All right, okay, Austin. What's your next story, Austin?
Next story here. Let me pull it up. China now has basically launched a very interesting, which is almost terrifying, what they're coming out with now. It's you can opt out and opt in for the time being, starting next year, and then it will become basically mandatory in 2020. It's going under the innocuous name of Sesame Credit. China has created a score of how good of a citizen you are. This is so beyond weird. It's like the owners of China's largest social networks have partnered with the government to create something akin to the U.S. credit score. But instead of measuring how regularly you pay your bills, as our credit scores in the United States, it measures essentially how obediently you follow the party line. It has been in the works for years now. China's social credit system aims to create a docile, compliant citizenry who are fiscally and morally responsible by employing a game-like format to create self-imposed group social control. Remember, this is going to be mandatory in 2020. So, and it's interesting here is what the article states. Among the things that will hurt a citizen's score are posting political opinions without prior permission or posting information that the regime does not like, such as about the Tiananmen Square massacre that the government carried out to hold on to power or the Shanghai stock market collapse. It will hurt your score not only if you do these things, but any of your friends do them as well. And what appears likely the goal of the entire program, imagine the social pressure against disobedient or dissidents that this will create. Now, mandatory enrollment in Sesame Credit is still a few years away. Its true effectiveness won't be measured for some time. But this is insanity, guys. I mean, this right here, this is full-blown tyrannical government police state. I had no idea China was this far unhinged. As far as I knew, they were pretty rough, But this is insane. Well, essentially what they're doing is they're creating a Facebook credit score, political correctness score, and if you do anything, your score goes down and your friends that are on there with you go down, and it's mandatory in 2020, which means I'm sure it's going to start linking to other stuff as far as finances, passport eligibility, stuff like that. So if your Sesame score is not high enough, what they're going to do is they're just going to start revoking things from you until you decide to bring your score back up and be a more docile citizen, I'm assuming.
You know, Austin, that's brilliant strategy for the use of social media for a communist dictatorship.
Oh, yeah. Really, oh, yeah.
No, it's brilliant because you're using all that peer pressure from all those social groups.
Yep.
That'll be slamming you back on Facebook to get their own score back up to make you feel like you're not a good citizen, to try to force you either to kill yourself or do whatever or to comply. And so that absolutely is brilliant. I'm sure the Satan boys figured that one out. Because, you know, that's what so many people are so concerned about. They're so concerned about what everybody else thinks about them. And I always tell folks, I said, if you're concerned about what people think about you, you don't get on radio or TV because it's going to everybody take pot shots at you. You get all the positive things, too, but you get the negative stuff because you always have the folks that don't agree with you. And like I said earlier in the show, they may agree with 95% of what you say, but they're going to prove to you that you're wrong on the other 95%. And I've dealt with that my entire adult professional career, being on radio since 1980. See, last first time I was on radio, I think it was like 85, 86. And I've been doing this for like, oh gosh, 25 years now. And no, 30 years now. And the craziest thing is that, you know, you always have somebody out there that they want to set you straight. And see, when you allow yourself, that's why I don't do Facebook. You know, Health Masters does Facebook, and we have Facebook, and we appreciate you liking us on Facebook on Health Masters. What is our Facebook address, Harris? Austin, I don't even know. For Health Masters. Do you even know?
That's a good question. I'm not a huge Facebook fan. I can ask Lana real quick if you want me to.
God, this is awful. Yeah, go ahead and ask Lana. And while you're doing that, I'll talk about the website. This again, we practice what we preach, okay? We got a few thousand likes on Facebook, and I'm like, you know, whatever, it ever. Man, who cares? I mean, because remember, I'm old school. I mean, I was born in 1955. I still like, you know, the Righteous Brothers, you know, on the radio. I mean, I still like some of the old Hank Williams songs. I mean, I still like a lot of that old stuff. And, you know, and the craziest thing about this is, you know, people that are my age, they realize what's happened to the United States because they remember what it once was. I mean, our website.
Okay, I got it. It's facebook.com/teamhealthmasters.
Gosh, could we have gotten a more complicated link? That's awful.
It's the facebook.com/. That is in there all the time. But our Facebook name is Team Health Masters.
Oh, Team Health. Okay, good. Team Health Masters. I like that. I like Team Health Masters. Okay, like us on Team Health Masters on Facebook, okay? And do all that kind of stuff. And a lot of you guys are really into that. And so like us and carry our articles and carry our show on your Facebook pages. And that's good because it helps to get the word out. But the truth of the matter is, being old school, you know, a lot of this stuff to me just doesn't mean anything. I mean, here's what I was taught as a child. If you work on your own building one brick at a time, you can have the tallest building in a town. And there's another way of doing it. You know, you can go out and tear down all the other buildings. See, and that's what I don't want to do. I want to build people up and encourage people and try to do the best I possibly can to be supportive of people. And that's why I've got so many friends for so many years, because when people become my friends, I really like them and I stick with them. So healthmasters.com, thank you for your support. Thank you for signing up for our email. Our email is growing crazy now with how many people have signed up on it now. So thank you for signing up for healthmasters.com, and thank you for liking us at Team Health Masters on Facebook. Here's another story for us. This is another interesting one. EU people smugglers likely earn at least $1 billion in 2015. This is from the Economic Policy Journal. More than 1 million refugees and migrants came to the European Union this year, while almost 3,700 died or went missing in perilous journeys, which reaped huge profit for smugglers. The International Organization for Migration says people smuggling operations probably accounted for the majority of journeys and likely earned at least $1 billion. OM Chief William Lacey Swing told Reuters, taking anywhere from maybe $2,000 to $6,000 on how many members of the family and depending on which smuggling ring it is. I remember last month I was listening to one of the stories online, and this group of people that were being smuggled out of Mexico, they found them dead in a refrigerated truck, and they had basically gotten in there and basically suffocated. And I think there were like 20 or 30 of them. And they had actually dug a hole through the bottom of the truck trying to get out. So either the carbon monoxide got them or the lack of air got them. They were all dead when they opened the truck. And the person who was driving, the smuggler who was driving the truck, when he saw they were all dead, he just left the truck on the side of the road and walked away or got a ride or hitchhiked out of there. He was gone. And so this goes on all the time, especially from South America through Central America into the United States. And the same thing's happening over there in Europe. A lot of these people want to get out of these countries, but, you know, especially in Africa, they, you know, there's a big thing called the Mediterranean Ocean between them and where they want to go, and they don't want to have to journey all the way to Egypt and try to go up that way. So the reality is they're coming through, and that's how they're getting out of these different African countries and getting into Germany, where the great war criminal Angela Merkel has told them all that they get free everything if they come there, which is absolutely ridiculous. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, just give everybody a heads up. You know, we've discussed about tuna and whatnot. A lot of times it's always containing mercury and heavy metals. Now a new study comes out. You know, I mean, tuna is a top predator fish, so it accumulates toxins and radiation, especially now on the West Coast, as we're seeing. But a study now from 2 years ago, researchers from Stanford University and Stony Brook University tested the radioactive cesium levels in Pacific bluefin tuna caught off the coast of California. They found the radioactive element in every single fish tested. They said every one of them had comparable concentrations of cesium-134 and 137. Overall levels of radioactive cesium has increased at least 3% in the year before the Fukushima disaster. And not just Pacific bluefins that are being radioactive. A 2014 study conducted last year from researchers from Oregon State University and published in the Journal of Environmental Science and Technology found even more dramatic effects of the Fukushima disaster on sea life, particularly on albacore tuna. The researchers compared levels of radioactive isotopes in tuna caught off the coast of Oregon between 2008 and 2012. They also found that following the Fukushima disaster, levels of radioactive isotopes have tripled. And you basically, I mean, there's a lot of people that say, well, there's always a small portion of that. However, any radiation is bad. It is like mercury. It doesn't matter how much is in it. It's not good for you. So be very wary if you guys are eating tuna. We've talked about it before because it's usually loaded with toxins. But this is a fish right now. It's probably best to stay away from for a while.
You know what's interesting, Austin? You know, tuna is a skin fish. People don't realize that. It doesn't have scales. And hence being a skin fish is like a catfish. And it's forbidden by biblical law, by Levitical law, to eat. Now remember, the five first books of Levitical law were written by God Almighty himself on the mountain with Moses. And so, you know, that's the Torah, the Pentateuch. And he tells you very specifically not to eat pork and not to eat basically fish that don't have fins and scales, like octopus and squid and tuna. And I've been following those guidelines for years and years and years, because back in 1981, Henry Minks, may he rest in peace now, he basically took me to a place called Greenleaf Golf and Country Club, which was the home of the PGA in Lake Wales, Florida. This is way back in, like, the gosh, it's like 34 years ago. And what was interesting about this is they had a seafood buffet. I don't know if I've ever told you the story or not. And what happened is me and Gene Dawes, my good friend from high school and college, he ended up going with us that night, and we both became deathly ill from shellfish poisoning. And I mean, I literally vomited for 4 days. I almost had to be hospitalized. And I tell you what, that got my attention, and I don't do that stuff anymore. And then a few years later, I came out with that pericarditis and ended up almost dying with heart disease at the age of 27, fresh out of graduate school at Florida State. And what ended up happening is I began to realize very quickly that a lot of the stuff that I'd been taught at the university as far as health and nutrition simply wasn't true. And I started to realize that there were things that we had to do from a natural standpoint in order to be healthy. And that sent me back to school again, and I started getting my naturopathic training. But what was interesting about this is I've learned over the years that, you know, certain foods just need to be avoided. And all the biblically forbidden foods, there's a reason God said not to do it. He knew that pork was bad way before they developed refrigeration. I mean, they were used as septic tanks. That's why the Biological Therapy, Volume 1, Number 2, 1983, by Professor Hans Reckwig, called The Adverse Influence of Pork Consumption on Health, talks about pork being a homo or human being toxin. And you really need to stay away from pork. That includes bacon, sausage, ham, pepperoni, and hot dogs. And many of you have heard me talk about the top 10 foods never to eat. And the first food on that top 10 list has always been the high-fat luncheon meats because of pork. And so, and also beef is bad too if it contains sodium nitrite, because it gives you a 60 times greater incident of pancreatic cancer. So sodium nitrite is super, super bad, and all pork products are bad. Now here's an interesting article that just came out of Russia Today. is almost too late to halt the spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria found in pigs. To stop an antibiotic-resistant bacteria gene found in pigs and humans created a global superbug crisis, scientists warn. Experts from the Antibiotic Research UK now say there is only a 50-50 chance of salvaging the world's antibiotics and keeping them usable against resistant diseases. The warning comes after scientists found a gene which makes bacteria resistant to the last gasp antibiotic defense, known as colistin. Resistance to colistin is thought to be the final step toward effectively untreatable diseases. And now this is found in pigs. Now remember, there's 37 diseases that are transmitted from pogs into humans. And don't eat pork. Don't eat pork. Period. It's bad for you. It's super unhealthy. Don't do it. I've been talking about this for 35 years, and I haven't changed my mind yet. What do you think about that, Oz?
Oh, and people always laughed at me when I was younger, you know, even in college and stuff, because we'd all, you know, a lot of times you go out to eat all the time. And I'd always order stuff, or sometimes there were meals that have bacon or something would come on it, and I didn't know. And as soon as I get it, you know, I peel it off and give it to somebody else or throw it on my plate. A lot of times I throw it on my plate, and then everybody's always, are you going to eat that bacon? Are you going to eat that? I'm like, no, man, I mean, if you want to eat it, you can eat it, but I'm not going to eat it. And, you know, it's funny because people always thought that was so odd, you know, and I would explain to them a lot of times the exact same way, you know, what you just explained. Those people still never got it. And that's what most people have to understand. If you have any type of Christian background, there's a reason why God said, don't eat pork, don't eat shellfish. It wasn't because he just wanted to come up with random laws and rules to try and force you to follow. These animals were specifically designed to be bottom feeders, either of the ocean or of the earth. They're designed to clean up, basically, the crap of all the other animals that are around it. That's what they do. They feed on it. They eat it. They process it. And they eliminate it, but they eliminate it much more efficiently than other animals do. So they basically hold all those toxins, chemicals, pollutants in their bodies. Now people a lot of times come up and say, well, what about, you know, farm-raised, non-GMO, organic hogs? Well, you know what? If that's really the route you're wanting to go, if you find a truly certified, organic, home-raised, non-GMO hog with no hormones or pesticides, that's fed organic meal his entire life, and you want to eat it that way, go buy it. Go eat it. I don't care. But I'm still not going to eat it regardless.
Well, you know what's interesting, and I'll have to pull that article up, and you guys can look it up. It's called The Adverse Influence of Pork Consumption on Health, and it's in the bylaw, and you just do it. It's by Professor Hans Reckwig. Write it down, R-E-C-K-W-E-G, Professor Hans Reckwig. And it's The Adverse Influence of Pork Consumption on Health. It's about 12 pages long. But one of my favorite parts about this, he said that what they did is they did this through radioactive isotope labeling. And they were actually able to take certain parts of the pig and feed it to human beings to see where it would go in the human body. And what they found was that it goes to where it biologically belongs. And what's interesting is that the humans and pigs share a lot of the same DNA. That's why they use a lot of pig valves in human heart valve transplants. And what was interesting about this is they found that if a person ate ham from the buttocks of the pig, that it would actually go to the buttocks of the woman who or the man who was eating the ham. And the same thing, if you got a thick fold of fat on the back of your neck, from the bacon from the back of the pig's neck, it would go to the back of your own neck as a human being. And he said that a lot of people had actually deformed themselves and had big humps on their neck, and they actually started looking like pigs because they were eating the meat that was from these animals, because it goes in the bile, it goes in the human body to where it biologically belongs. So what he's saying is, ladies, if you want to have a big old set of buttocks like a pig, eat ham. Guys, if you want to have a bunch of big old hump at the back of your neck, start eating bacon off the back of a pig's neck. That's what the article says. So you can read it yourself and get the full gist of it. But the reality is, that just doesn't sound like something I want to do. I mean, that sounds really awful. And again, God told us, don't eat pork. Here's an interesting article from Seymour Hersh. This is really interesting. And it kind of tells me that there's a little bit of a rift going on between the executive office and the Pentagon and the CIA and the NSA. And I talked about this a little bit, about that rift on the Hagman Show the other day. Seymour Hersh. He wrote a paper. This is like a 7,000-word piece in the London Review of Books. And here's what he said. The Pentagon secretly passed intelligence to the Assad government. This is from Sputnik News. The Pentagon deliberately subverted American policy towards Syria. the Pentagon did, not the White House, sabotaging U.S. White House efforts to aid Syrian rebels and even send U.S. intelligence to Syrian President Assad, according to journalist Seymour Hersh. In a nearly 7,000-word piece in the London Review of Books, Hersh says that the Joint Chiefs of Staff, America's top military leaders, decided to deliberately subvert American foreign policy and form a secret alliance with Assad and President Putin. At his source, Hersh cites one anonymous former senior advisor to the Joint Chiefs. In summer 2013, the Joint Chiefs discovered that Turkey had co-opted the CIA's program to arm so-called moderate Syrian rebels. Ankara decided to redirect U.S. aid to extremists, including Daesh and al-Qaeda affiliate Nusra Front. Hersh writes, the Joint Chiefs also discovered that viable, moderate Syrian rebels did not exist and that the opposition consisted nearly uniformly of extremists. Now, remember, he's quoting this from back in 2013. Remember a couple years ago, Austin, when the government, when the president started firing all the admirals and the generals and started dumping these top brass in the military?
Yep.
And I got a feeling this is all tied together with that, because there's a rift right now with the NSA, the CIA. See, everybody knows the CIA is a satanic organization with their witches and all the weird stuff they do. This is a group of Satanists is what they are. And what they're doing is they're basically going into opposition now against other members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and other military personnel. So apparently that's what's going on in the White House, and Seymour Hersh wrote a whole paper. And, of course, you'll never hear about this on the mainstream media. There's another article. Desperate, the Pentagon peddles suspect docs to prove ISIS evil documents. And this is out of Breitbart. Pentagon spokesman Colonel Steve Warren highlighted what may be a forged document to insist that the Islamic State is in desperation mode and beginning to feel the pressure of the U.S.-led coalition efforts against the terrorist group. I mean, you know, the whole thing about this is, and I'm going to say this again, all of this is about money, it's about gas lines, it's about oil, and it's about heroin. That's what this is about. This group of people in the CIA are so wicked and so awful, all they care about is themselves and increasing their own net worth and enslaving the population of the planet. Austin, what's your next story?
Oh, yeah, you're spot on with that. Well, it's funny because, you know, we hear about the whole global warming politician meetup in Paris when they had their whole climate meeting. And it's funny now because this week, Colorado Weather Station observed a record low of negative 51 degrees, which basically is incredibly low. Their third lowest that's ever been recorded in 50 years. It was about 100 miles southwest of Denver. Southwest of Denver, not north. The last time the temperature was basically even close to that was 1989. But it's just funny to me because we always hear all this stuff now. We need to have more, you know, UN control and the UN Agenda 21, and we have to combat global warming. Well, tell that to Colorado, because they just hit negative 51 degrees right now. That's pretty significantly cold in the United States, and they're not even that far north. So I just thought that was a funny article to bring about. Also, too, the firearms background checks keep going higher and higher and higher. You guys know that Black Friday had the highest background checks of any day in recorded history at 185,000 that one day. So far in October, you know, they saw 1.9 million for the month. November went up to 2.2 million. And now it looks like with December, according to it, it should be pushing that number, if not going a little bit higher, which will surpass the all-time high of 2013, which was a little bit over 21 million background checks in 1 year. It looks like by the end of this year, we will be surpassing that again. So that's a pretty clear indication that a lot of people know, like you have talked about before, that something is going on. People don't just buy guns in record numbers like this because they don't think there's a need for them. Most people buy weapons because they plan on practicing with them, training with them, shooting them, becoming proficient with them, and as a last resort, using them to defend one's life or family's life. So I find it interesting that these numbers keep climbing every year. I'm completely for it. You know, I'm very pro-gun. But I just want to let everybody know that we're not the only ones that are saying this, because there's a lot of other people that are straight up buying weapons on a regular basis now.
Well, no, a lot of people are. I mean, you know, that's their right. I mean, it's a God-given right. I mean, the Constitution just highlighted it. And see, that's the thing. We have a right to defend ourselves. And I mean, everybody should be carrying a handgun, a concealed weapons, or an open carry. And if we all do that, everybody has mutual respect for each other. Nobody wants to start a conflict because there's going to be somebody else shooting back at you. Or, you know, so it's just the way it is. And I know that, you know, if I get stopped for a ticket or whatever, the first thing I always do, I'm always very respectful to the police officer, and I always say to them, here's my concealed weapons permit while I'm looking for my driver's license. And I always tell them, by the way, if there's a problem and I see you guys are in a firefight, I'm coming to your aid. I'm going to be there to help you guys. I'm going to support you guys, because we all have to do this together. You guys can't do it by yourselves. And invariably, they'll tell me, thank you so much. And a lot of times, they just give me my license back and say, have a good day. And I've had police officers tell me, you know, we don't ticket people who have concealed weapons permits, because that's the cream of the crop of the general population. Because we know they're clean. They don't have any felonies. And so we want them on our side if something bad happens. See, that's how we're supposed to work together with the police. This constant hatred of police against regular people, against the police, and back and forth, is nonsense. That's completely counterproductive. And if we all work together as a team, as part of all on the same side, we can have a really good relationship like we had with the police back in the 60s. I remember back in the 60s, before all the civil rights movement started, which a lot of that had to happen. We had to get civil rights corrected in the United States. But the police were really, really, really nice. I mean, they would just, if you did something wrong, you were a kid, and this never happened to me, but it happened to other friends that I knew, they would take you home to your parents. Your parents would take the redwood out, or the belt out, or the paddle out, and you'd get spanked, and that'd be the end of it. And they thanked the police for doing what they did. Nowadays, it's not like that anymore. Now you can't even talk to them anymore, because they're doing an investigation on you or your family or your children, and they can put you in jail with the state attorney's office for doing absolutely nothing and call the Department of Family Services on you. This whole twisted route that we have now of no longer having synergy with law enforcement and government agencies is nonsense. It's counterproductive, and it doesn't help anybody, Austin.
Yes, you're absolutely right on that. And that's the thing, too. If anything happens, it doesn't matter what happens. If you get arrested, you're pretty much getting charged now with assault on an officer for resisting arrest.
it's sad, but it's true. So you guys, stay healthy. Don't drink and drive, number one. Number two, if you're going to drink, get a designated driver. Number three, hey, why don't you just don't drink at all? It's a lot healthier for you. Increases the risks of pancreatic cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, alcoholism, osteoporosis, and breast cancer. So avoid it. Go to healthmasters.com. Sign up for our website or our newsletter. And guys, tomorrow we're going to be playing the show from the Hagman Show from last Friday night, also on Christmas Day, and also on Sunday night. God bless you guys. We'll be live again on Monday. I appreciate all of you, and thank you for your support. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. We love you guys. Thank you so much.
You guys have a blessed Christmas. If you need anything, give us a call. We'll be open till Thursday. Tomorrow we will be closed, obviously, for the Friday and for the weekend. But we appreciate you guys. Have a blessed Christmas, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.